When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What is going on, guys? Welcome to Fightful Movie Club. My name is Rob Wilkins, along with Gisberto Guzzo, and our special guest today is none other than Royce Isaacs. Royce, thanks for joining us today, and thank you guys
for having me.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for choosing Training Day, man. I love this movie, so I am excited to talk about it.
Excellent. Yeah, no, it's like in my Mount Rushmore of movies. It's my comfort movie. I watch it whenever it's on a plane. That's my movie.
Awesome. Yeah. So before we get into Training Day, one thing we kind of like to ask our guests is, were you always a movie fan growing up? And if so, did you have any favorites, ones that you would rewatch over and over?
Let's see. I definitely, I guess I feel like I did actually watch a lot of movies growing up, because it would be like me and my dad would just kind of do on our downtime. And he always, as a kid, I watched a lot of like Akira Kurosawa flicks and and spaghetti westerns and stuff like that. And then I feel like as an adult, I've gotten into a lot more like film noir and darker, grimy movies and such. But I like a little bit of variety for sure. I'm a little bit all over the place. I am a little bit disillusioned with a lot of modern cinema, where I'll see a stupid 90s teen movie, and I'm like, that's actually written better than a lot of the stuff that is coming out today, and it's crazy to me. But maybe that's also just me being nostalgic about things from the 90s. I don't know.
I think you have a bit of a point. I think the last 10 years has been pretty hit and miss with movies. I've sort of found the same thing. So I don't think you're alone in that. There are still some great movies being released, but I feel like in the 90s, we did kind of have that sort of mid-budget adult drama that they're really not making too much of anymore.
So based on your career, did you, wow, pretty easy for me to talk. Training Day is one of your favorite movies. Was there any influence in your career, with this movie or any movies? Did you have any influences as far as character goes or anything like that?
I don't think for Training Day specifically, but definitely, especially early on in my career, I would say another one of my favorite all-time movies is Big Trouble, Little China. And Jack Burton was definitely a heavy character influence. Or the OG original Mortal Kombat, I felt like Johnny Cage's character in that, being that kind of sarcastic anti-hero, was always really fun. And I think probably a little bit less so now, but definitely early on in my career, I feel like that's kind of where I took a lot of my character work from.
Very cool.
That's awesome. So yeah, as we move into Training Day, I guess just generally speaking, before we get into the specifics, what is it about the movie that you love and kind of keeps you coming back to it over and over?
So at this point, it's just such a nostalgic trip for me, where I remember every little scene and it's like, hey, they're doing the thing. But what originally got me so much about it was it's such an interesting, it's like one of the best examples, I think, if you're a wrestler, to watch for faces and heels, because they do a really good job of having the ultimate babyface Ethan Hawke and the ultimate heel Denzel Washington. And they do it in a way where Ethan Hawke is the ultimate white meat babyface, but I don't think he ever really comes off as like a corny, come on guys, white meat babyface. Like, he is someone that you genuinely root for, even through a 2024 lens where every single hero has to be kind of edgy and has to have all these sarcastic remarks and whatever. He is like a really good example of, he is just a pure babyface, but he's still the guy that you root for and the guy that you like. And Denzel, while being the ultimate heel, is also just a very interesting character that you kind of like, you kind of want to like him, but you just know that you can't because he is such an embodiment of evil. And then so many of the other characters that are layered in that are various levels of, are they a guy? Are they a bad guy? Are they kind of a good guy in a bad situation? Are they chaotic neutral? What's their deal? And so I think it's a really good character study. And I do think it's also just really well written, all the little callbacks, all the little things that are weaved, the themes that are weaved throughout. It's probably like David Ayer is the writer, and I think it's probably his best writing because he was a little bit confined because he wasn't directing. And I do like some of his movies that he's directed, but I think you see in some of his later works, he's almost got a little bit too much freedom, and certain things of certain movies go off the wall or they don't hit. And in that one, because he was just doing the writing and he had someone else kind of directing and maybe forming it a little bit, I think it's just like it melds together really well and makes a classic movie.
I think you made a great point about the Ethan Hawke's character, Hoyt. He is that white meat baby face, but he can't be too corny because Denzel is so charming that you need him to be likable for Denzel to actually work as a villain. Because if you're just rooting for his character the entire time and you don't care about Hoyt, then the movie doesn't work as well as it does.
Absolutely. Also, I'm sorry, my dog is sometimes, he likes to give his take. Hey, Gimlet, come here. Let me, I agree with you. Sorry, let me grab him real quick so he doesn't keep interrupting. Oh, Gimlet, you're trying to be the star of the show.
Oh, I'm waiting for my everyone. The exact same thing. Oh.
Hey, Gimlet.
And your point about, the David Ayer, also interesting too, because he had some other movies that he wrote that everyone would know, like Fast and the Furious, the first one he wrote that. And then he would write End of Watch with Jake Gyllenhaal and Michael Peña, yes, which is another really good cop movie. And then probably most famously Suicide Squad, which had tons of studio interference and didn't really go his way. So yeah, he's definitely hit and miss.
For sure. I think End of Watch is a really good one too, although super depressing and sad, but that's a really good movie. And he clearly has a very, one of his biggest, like he always tends to go back to Los Angeles Police Department and Los Angeles crime is definitely, he always kind of ends up going back there with one of his movies before too long.
Yeah. And I think you guys can probably speak to this better than I could. And just in my research on it, Antoine Fuqua, who was the director of the movie, he stated that the emergence of the Rampart scandal in the late 90s kind of sped up the completion of the film, and then Denzel Washington kind of grew a beard to help emulate the appearance of Rafael Perez, an LAPD narcotics officer who was involved in multiple scandals. In Canada, I don't really have too much knowledge of this, so I don't know if you guys can speak any of that or kind of how it affected the movie.
I don't really recall that being, I don't really recall that name, to be honest with you. So I don't recall that being a part of this. So maybe you, Royce, but I don't recall.
So I was a kid, so it's not something I specifically remember at the time. Maybe a couple years ago, I do remember watching a YouTube video that was talking about that scandal. I don't think they had connected the movie to the scandal in the video, but that actually does make sense. And I know that, you know, LAPD has had issues even in the more recent history with like sheriff's departments having gangs and stuff like that. Like, I know it's kind of a common issue that the department has had. So, I mean, I think it's all relevant stuff, even if it is obviously highly fictionalized in this movie and whatever. It is an interesting theme to me, and it's an interesting thing to look at. And like the general idea of corruption of power is always something that should be examined, and it's interesting, something to explore, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah. That now I'm very curious to learn more about it, but just to go over like some random facts about the movie before we like get into the scenes. This was Antoine Fuqua. One of, in my opinion, his best movie that he's directed, but he's one of my favorite directors. He's directed so many great action movies. The first movie he directed is, in my opinion, and I don't use the term often, but it's a very underrated movie. It's The Replacement Killers with Chow Yun-Fat and Mira Sorvino. Absolutely love that movie. It is just action-packed. And then he's done movies like Shooter with Mark Wahlberg. A lot of people don't know this, but he was actually the music director for the video Gangsta's Paradise with Coolio. Oh,
cool. So
just some random cool things like that. But just things like that, just I like knowing the history of where people come from when it comes to this stuff. Ethan Hawke was received a lot of critically acclaimed work for this role, or he got a lot of recognition for his work in this role. He did, and that was something that this was kind of like one of his, he's done studio features before, but this was where it seemed like more people were watching him, where he was, I mean, Denzel had obviously the screen presence, but a lot of people got to see him in a way that this was kind of like a breakout role for him in a way. So that was pretty like that. The movie had a $45 million budget. It did over $76 million in the United States. It was pushed back because of 9/11, but those are a couple of things that that stick out. Denzel Washington won the Oscar, of course, for Best Actor, which is deservedly so. So,
yeah. So it's kind of moving on to Denzel. Yeah, he did win the Oscar that year. He beat out Russell Crowe, Sean Penn, Will Smith, Tom Wilkinson. So some big names. So as far as Denzel goes, do you kind of consider this his most iconic role? Because I know there's maybe an argument to be had that maybe it's Malcolm X, maybe it's he got there's a few other ones. Maybe it's not the best movie of his, but I feel like if anyone's ever doing like a Denzel Washington impression, it's Denzel from Training Day. I don't know. What do you think of his performance, and kind of where does it stack up for you in terms of his all-time great performances?
I would say it's my personal favorite, which is tough because Denzel does have, like, I mean, he has bangers. If you go through his whole filmography, he has many hits. You can put him up there with any of the greatest actors in terms of like how many damn good movies you can watch. I think probably my second favorite Denzel movie, and it's a little more rare. It's called Devil in a Blue Dress, and it's him and Don Cheadle. It's a film noir, and that movie's phenomenal too. But I would put Training Day just barely edging it out.
Yeah, and so there was reports before the movie came out that there was talks with some other actors to play the role. So they had talks with Will Smith. They had talks with Samuel Jackson. I don't know. Can you actually see this movie with anyone but him? Because he has this charisma, this sort of down-to-earth quality, whereas I'm not sure Will Smith could actually pull it off. I think just in general, Denzel's a better actor, but Will Smith's great in these roles like Ali, where you kind of need that sort of larger than life swagger, but I don't think he pulls off Training Day. And I think Denzel actually makes a lot of Will Smith movies better if you were to reverse roles. So I don't know. Could you see anyone else but him kind of play this role? It's become so iconic. Just all his quotes, his everything. I can't see anyone but him.
You know, I could see an alternate world where Samuel L. Jackson could pull it off. I don't think it would be as good. I think it would be really good still. I don't know if it would be like this is one of my all-time favorite movies. Got to rewatch it. It might just be like, that was a really good movie. I enjoyed that. But Samuel L. Jackson's phenomenal. Will Smith, I think, would be a little bit tougher because I don't think his personality would have fit quite as well. I'm sure he would have pulled it off decent, but I would probably put him third in terms of ranking those three for this specific role. But I agree with your assessment, basically.
Yeah, and there's interesting. So before Antoine Fuqua came on to direct, there was a Davis Guggenheim was kind of slated to do it, and he had originally wanted Matt Damon as Hoyt and Samuel Jackson as Alonzo. And then once he left the project, there was Denzel came on, but then there was also talks for the Hoyt character. They'd made an offer to Eminem, but he turned it down to do 8 Mile, which is a crazy sort of sliding doors moment in history. Could you imagine if like Eminem had not done 8 Mile? Or even if he had just sort of pursued acting in general, every time I see him in a movie, I think he's actually pretty good. Like he was in, I don't know, did you ever see, I think it was called Funny People, the one with Adam Sandler, where he has cancer and he gets better. He has like a cameo in that movie where he's really
that
funny.
That cameo is hilarious. That cameo is freaking hilarious. It's the only part of that movie I remember.
Yeah, yeah. And then some of the other names they had was like Tom McGuire, Paul Walker, Freddie Prinze Jr. So kind of those late 90s, early 2000s names that you always heard. But
yeah,
Ethan Hawke is just great.
I agree. I think it ended up perfectly how it should have been. I do think in some weird way, I don't think it would have been as good. I do think Eminem would have done a decent job because I do think he could kind of embody. He's good at that kind of like ponderous look of self-doubt that kind of Hoyt has throughout like a lot of it. Yeah. I think he would have been a little bit different, but I think he would have done well. I think Paul Walker probably would not have had the range. I think Paul Walker was perfect for Fast and the Furious where he just has to kind of be too cool for school and whatever. I don't think he would have been perfect for Hoyt. Tobey Maguire, I think he would have came off too goofy and corny. I don't think he would have been a good Hoyt. Yeah. And was there any other one?
A little bit of that. Freddie Prinze Jr., Ryan Philippe, and that was kind of the list. But Hoyt has to be, like you said, he has to be lovable, but he also has to be kind of tough and able to kind of handle himself. And early 2000 Tobey Maguire, I agree. I think he's just a little too, I don't know, he just comes off kind of soft.
Yeah, I agree. I think Ryan Philippe, I like Ryan Philippe. He's in The Gun, which I think is a great movie. I once again don't think he would have had the right range for Hoyt specifically. I don't think he would have had quite the right character and range. Freddie Prinze is interesting. Since he might own a wrestling company one day, I'm going to say he would have done the best job. It would have been the greatest movie. So if he's watching, you know, you're my guy. No, I think Ethan Hawke was the right choice overall. I think he did that role so well, and he just has the right – I think he's a great actor, and I think he was, like, made for that role.
Yeah, and before I hand it back to Rob, he knows one of my things to do is to kind of go back and relitigate the Oscars years after the fact. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
Ethan Hawke was nominated for Best Supporting Actor. He doesn't win. These were the other nominees. Ben Kingsley, Sexy Beast. Ian McKellen, Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring. John Voight, Ali, which is ridiculous. He's in like 2 minutes of that movie. And Jim Broadbent in Iris. Do you know who won the Oscar that year? It was Jim Broadbent in Iris.
I was going to say only because that was the one I was like least familiar with. Of course he won it. Yeah.
How does Ethan Hawke not win this Oscar? I'm trying to think of all the people that have been in movies with Denzel Washington. There's maybe like two or three where you can say they actually held their own and reached his level. Like what you've Tom Hanks in Philadelphia, maybe. I don't really love that movie. Viola Davis in Fences. Maybe that might be it.
I would say Don Cheadle in Devil in a Blue Dress. Oh yeah. Also, yeah. But that's it. That's the three, you know?
Yeah. So yeah. I don't know. How he doesn't win that Oscar, that's just nonsense to me.
Yeah, that's criminal. I would have thought they would have gone or something. It's like, okay, that's like a big blockbuster, I get it, you do your whatever, but like if you're not gonna go with him, Ethan Hawke far and away did the best job out of all of those people in that category.
Yeah. And I think Rob, you'd agree, like Denzel deserved his. He probably should have won it for Malcolm X. This almost felt like he had to win it at some point here. And I mean, you had Russell Crowe for A Beautiful Mind, Sean Penn for I Am Sam, Will Smith for Ali, and Tom Wilkinson in The Bedroom. So, I mean, it was Denzel's to lose, but he probably should have had his Oscar like 10 years earlier.
Yeah. Yeah, because Malcolm X was 1992, I believe. Yeah. So, yeah. But yeah, that's very interesting. Well, we already talked about the director and the writer. So what are your, do you have like a favorite scene or favorite scenes or like quotes in this Training Day? I mean, there's a lot. So it's, I mean,
there is a lot.
I wrote them all down. We're going to go through every single one.
Yeah. Okay, good. Because it is really hard to pick one scene or one quote. I think off the top of my head, what I would go with without thinking about it too much, favorite scene is the part where he's playing cards with the Mexican gangbangers. I think that's like an all time. And I think for quotes, you know, Denzel's last little like fire up spot at the ends where, you know, I'll put cases on all of you. You'll be playing basketball, Pelican Bay. King Kong ain't got shit on me. You just live here. I run shit here. Like that's amazing. That's that. And like, it's not what you know, it's what you can prove that keeps going throughout the whole movie that are like, stick out to me.
Yeah. And the King Kong part was ad lib too, they said. So
really?
Yeah.
Woo, that's a hell of an ad lib. I also, in the card scene, I always pop for the fact that one of the gangbangers, the guy that ends up playing Tuco Salamanca on Breaking Bad, which I didn't obviously at the time, it's not a thing. And then when I rewatch it, I'm like, oh my God, there's Tuco. Like, whoa.
Oh, that's, oh man. I didn't realize that now until you said that. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess we'll start from the beginning. I have five scenes written down. I made like a top five list. So for me, their first meeting when at the diner, the whole tell me a story scene, I think that's absolutely incredible. Denzel's just like, all right, you won't let me read my paper. Tell me a story. And then Ethan Hawke tells him the story about the drunk stop. He's like, you telling me you've been on patrol with a fine woman for this long and the best story you have is about a drunk stop? And then he does the whole thing. He's like, I get entertainment from this. This is 90% bullshit. You won't let me read it, so you entertain me. That whole scene, I think, is just lights out.
Yes. Yes. And you see, like, when you rewatch it, if you've watched it before and you rewatch it, it's such a good like setup scene for where you kind of see why he's able to have such a influence and control over Ethan Hawke for so much of the movie, because it's like a classic way to manipulate people where you kind of, he always has him on the back foot. He's always having Ethan Hawke kind of like, reacting like, oh no, I don't want to upset the big boss that's like in charge of if I can make lieutenant and if I can make detective and whatever. Like it's such a good, that, and then obviously everything that happens after continues this trend, but it just sets the scene how layered in of why does this guy go along with all this stuff, or why does it take him so long to realize, whoa, things aren't what they seem. I think it's very relatable to be in a situation where something isn't quite what you thought it was, but you're going into it with the mindset of like, oh, this is going to be a good thing for me. This is going to, you know, I could get this promotion. This could change my life. This is the guy that I have to like listen to. And then when you look back on it years later, you're like, man, this guy sucked. He clearly didn't have my best interest at heart, whatever, but it's such a like relatable human type of thing. I think it's a great scene. And I obviously like the little anecdote at the beginning, all that is, it's really good. The way it's written, everything about it. That's a great scene for sure.
Yeah. And actually, even just before that scene, I wanted to mention, and I completely forgot. How do you feel about those minutes with Ethan Hawke and his wife, kind of showing his family? I always thought it was a little bit slow. I understand the purpose because you need to know what's on the line for him, what he's coming home to at the end of the day. But at the same time, I also wish there was like a bit of a prequel scene showing Alonzo in Las Vegas getting in trouble with the Russians, killing the person, just because there's the whole story with like Alonzo, the Russians, the three wise men, that I feel like there's just like a great story there that maybe they didn't tap into as much as I would have liked. But I don't know. How do you feel about that?
That is interesting. And off the top, you mentioning that does sound like something that would be good. for the movie. I think there is something though that I like about how it's put together that you don't, I think that might give away too much that Alonzo is this bad guy, that Alonzo is in the wrong and that things aren't what they seem. And I kind of like that it's a little bit vague and you start to get little hints and little hints and you don't really realize until whatever, halfway through, you're like, oh, this is fully corrupt. And he's, there's no like, oh, actually he's doing it still for the right reason. He is the lambs or whatever he says. So I don't know. It would be interesting to see like a director's cut where they did something like that, but maybe overall it was done the correct way. But maybe.
Rob, how do you feel about that?
No, I was just going back thinking about it, and it's as far as like the I see exactly your point with like the family part. I like how they did that because it makes sense in the end. What he has to go back home to. As far as like if they would have back to show like the Vegas stuff, I think Royce is right. It might have kind of, I don't want to say overdo it, but it might have played a little bit too much for me.
That's maybe maybe there's like a 10-episode Netflix series in the future just showing like this way. I would love that.
Yes, absolutely. I'm in for it for sure.
All right, fantastic. The next scene I have is just really anything with Scott Glenn, the retired cop. Him at the beginning getting Hoyt is introduced to him, and then at the end when they end up killing him, they find the money under his floorboards. They sort of coordinate the whole story that they're going to tell the cops. I have some maybe questions in logic regarding that scene, but I think the whole thing is set up so great. I also just love like the detail that this guy, he's a retired cop, right? And he just knows this guy who played high school football maybe 10, 15 years earlier. He's like, oh yeah, defensive back, right? He just remembers every kid who played high school football from that area, which is just fantastic. But yeah, I don't know. Any thoughts on the scenes with Scott Glenn and them robbing him and kind of coordinating the whole story?
So one, yeah, Scott Glenn is great in there. I think... First of all, I also have to really quick go back to, I love the scene of him forcing Hoyt to get high. Denzel forcing Hoyt to get high. Yes. I don't know, you like to get wet is a great lead into that. And then this kid's higher than shit or whatever, as Scott Glenn says when he comes in. I think the story that he tells, like the joke that he tells about like the snail and the fuck's your problem, is really and really interesting. And especially when you start, if you start to later kind of try to break that joke down and that joke, you'll understand how policing works or whatever. It's like, okay, that is, even if you don't necessarily view policing that way or policing in LA or whatever quite that way, through the lens of this movie at least, you kind of get, okay, this is what they're getting at, or this is what that could be interpreted as, which I think is a really vital and important piece. I do actually somewhat understand or relate to the like the old dude that just happened to follow the good high school football players. I went to a really big high school that, like in Colorado, we were always like in the running for the state championship or whatever. And like our stadium would have, I mean like 4,000 people, 10,000 people for big games or whatever, you know, on a weekly basis. And we had a big high school, but a lot of those people were not like related to anyone on the field. They were just like, we want to see, you know, high level high school football. And there would be people that would just know, oh, hey, that's so-and-so. They're the all state running back. That's so-and-so. They're going to West Virginia next year on a full ride. So I thought that was like a super, I was like, oh yeah. Like I know, I remember 10 people like that, that were, you know, watching my school games or whatever. I think, I do agree. There's probably, if you really analyze the later scene, their plan, there are some small holes in whatever their plan would be and whether they would be able to get away with it. But I guess the general idea is that there's overall corruption so that they would only need to really cover up certain slight things about it. And so it never like takes me out of the movie where I'm like, oh, that's too much of a jump. And I'm like, I'm not believing the world you're creating or whatever.
Yeah, and I think the way is done in a way too, where they leave enough kind of clues and crumbs that explains why things might be happening this way, rather than, because if they didn't tell the story in the way they did, you might just be wondering, well, why doesn't he just take that money and leave town like immediately? So, and yeah, you actually mentioned the Denzel bullying Ethan Hawke into smoking the PCP. That was next on the list. Oh my God. That's such a great scene. I love when he stops in the middle of the road and that guy's like honking and he just pulls out the gun.
Yes.
That's just,
yeah, it's absolutely that part is a little bit, you're like, whoa, whoa. Like definitely now when I rewatch that, one of the parts that I'm like, all right, that's a little bit, almost takes me out of it, but it's like, it's part of the Denzel character. It's necessary. Yeah. The whole scene's great. Him tricking him into smoking Hoyt into smoking PCP. Like it is it's a classic scene. And you have like the whole, he's like, tripping, all the visuals. Yeah. I didn't know you like to get wet is like an all time. That's hilarious. You just out of context is okay. I get it.
Yeah. That, and we're going to get to the poker scene. There's another couple great lines there too, which some of these lines I don't even feel like comfortable saying them on camera, but
sure.
We're gonna get there. Oh my gosh. Then we get to stopping two crackheads from raping the girl, and then it's there you kind of get a better idea of sort of Denzel's worldview. He kind of says it in the car too, you know, like these people live outside the law, and if you want to catch them, that's sort of where you have to operate as well. And they track down Snoop Dogg, who's actually pretty good in this movie, much better than, I think it was Dr. Dre, who has a scene later on when he's part of the crew. Yeah, not doing too great. Yeah, then the poker scene. I mean, it's just fantastic. You have the great lines of them, Hoyt, you like being a pin? And he's like, I should have been a fireman. It's such a great line. They asked him, have you ever had your shit pushed in? Again, really hilarious.
Veins all popping in their neck.
Crazy.
Yes.
The one friend.
Yeah. The guy that ends up playing Tuco, and he's like, you've had your shit pushed in. I had my shit pushed in. Then one of the other guys is the guy Hector, who plays Hector in like 10 movies. I don't know if you've ever like done the deep dive on his IMDb, but he's literally just credited as Hector in like 10 different movies. Like someone screenshotted it. And it's become a little bit of a meme, but literally he plays a character named Hector in so many movies. It's hilarious.
I have to look that up. Now I'm like, I have to see this now.
Yes.
Yeah, that's awesome.
With the stuff with them stopping crackheads and then the poker scene, I get kind of ties together. Are you okay with the fact that like it was their cousin that he found the wallet that, and then that saves him from being, is that like a bit too like overly coincidental at that point? Do we just go with it? Cause I mean, like at this point, there's a lot of stuff just happening in this one day as it is.
Yeah. It is like the most stressful 24 hours of all time, probably. But I think you're allowed one deus ex machina like that in a movie that's that good. And I think it makes sense because they do, it is such a pivotal scene early on that it would be a little bit like, it's not like they didn't do their due diligence. Like he does pick up the ID and there's an acknowledgement on camera of, you know, him seeing it and, oh, she's only 16 or 14 or whatever he says. So it's not like that's never acknowledged. And then all of a sudden he has the ID. They just happened to call her and it was like, they did at least enough of the groundwork. It definitely, obviously, like I said, a deus ex machina, but I think you're allowed one. You're allowed one in a movie that's that good. The crackhead scene's really good. And it's so stressful in the later scene when they have him in the tub, they have the shotgun to him and they're about to do him. And it's like, is this going to go down right now? They call her up and she, hey, no, tell me for real, what happened? You go straight to school? Like, it's like really stressful, but in the best way. Also, actually really quick, I did want to go back. Like some things that I think I didn't notice when I was like a kid and I watched the movie that you then realize what's going on later is Alonzo's bringing them these blenders or whatever, like these appliances, which is obviously just dirty money. And then you realize when he's leaving them there now, and like, oh, he's paying them for a hit. He's giving them money to kill because they wouldn't just kill Hoyt for no reason. Why they're not just like, oh, let's just kill a random cop. That would probably look bad or whatever. But he's doing this delivery, obviously, to give them a job. Like, hey, here's all this money. Take care of my problem.
Yeah, I agree. And then at first I always wondered, like, would the gang members not go through with the hit because saved the cousin? They just make it like a slightly less painful or gruesome death. But I think it does work. I think there's something about like family and that sort of priority over money, which then you see that again in the later scene where the community all comes together. And they, you know, fuck you. We don't need you. We don't need your support, your money, or anything. We're a community. You're not part of this community. And then also Jake, you know, with his wife. So I think there's like this really kind of nice kind of underlying story about family within this movie as well, too.
Sure. And I think there's also a bit of the social commentary of, you know, yes, these people are gangsters, but they still do have a code. And even earlier on, G Bone, the guy that later is like, no, you gotta put on your own work, and puts down the gun for like when Alonzo walks past him, they have that little, oh, thanks for what you did for my cousin. He goes, man, I don't trust that guy. He has he doesn't have a code, or he doesn't have morals or something. Yeah. He says something in the lines of he doesn't have that line. Whereas you see repeatedly the commentary is that the gangsters, while they are gangsters, they do terrible things. They will do hits for money. They will sell drugs. They will whatever. They still have a street code that they stick to. And that's what sets them apart from someone like an Alonzo.
I did look, and Hector has 8 credits under the
8 credits as Hector. That's wild.
He's played Hector 8 times. So,
Rob, do you mind my asking while you have that up there, is that any other like really notable movies that it happened in, or is Training Day kind of the most notable one?
Where he played Hector, or
yeah,
no, he was he played Hector in The Furious, but in Training Day, so on IMDb they have his name as, what was it? I just had it right here. They had his name as,
but like the other movies where he's Hector, are any of them like big titles? So I guess Fast and the Furious.
Furious is probably the biggest one. He was on Fresh Off the Boat, that TV show. But other than that, it's the Fast and the Furious movies. All the other ones are like minor ones.
Okay, so, interesting.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so then I guess that brings us to the final, not final scene, but the fight between Hoyt and Alonzo, which happens in the apartment, then it's spilled onto the rooftop and then out onto the street. I just think that's one of like the great fight scenes that kind of I've ever watched, because there's so much tension. You genuinely hate Alonzo by this point in the movie. You feel so bad for Hoyt. I mean, we're going to come back to like just running down his day, but yeah, I don't know. Any thoughts on that whole fight? The way it ends, do you think Alonzo actually gets to walk out of that community unharmed the way he did?
So obviously if this was like a more realistic movie, I think the obvious thing is that the gangsters just turn on him and actually do him in. But I think that would mess with their narrative of them kind of having more morals than him, and how Hoyt says, you're wrong, they're not like you or whatever. So they have to kind of have it that way. And also to tie in the storyline with the Russians, is like they do want to have this overarching theme of eventually the karma does get Alonzo, and that's kind of the best way for that to happen. I agree. It's a really good fight scene from when they start out and they're shooting at each other. Jake Hoyt ends up being the one that saves his own kid, saves Alonzo's kid, and then they're on a balcony off a rooftop tumbling around. I think it's well shot too, where like, you know, because this isn't, it's not like an action movie per se. You know, it's like they're not having to do all these extra cuts and this stuff. It's not supposed to be this like, it's not like a kung fu fight. You know what I mean? Right. It's not like a current movie where every fight scene, no matter what, just has all these fast cuts here and there, and you can barely tell what's going on. It's supposed to show this like just two grown men tumbling over each other and fighting, and it's a little bit messy and it's scrappy, and you can just kind of watch it and see it, but it's still stressful. It's frenetic. There's a lot of movement. They're falling off of stuff, over stuff. All this stuff is happening. Then it obviously ends up with them in the streets with all the gangsters kind of coming out and the community coming out as well and being like, whoa, what's happening? And that's where like all the magic at the end with, you know, now you got to put in your own work. No, they ain't like you. The King Kong ain't got shit on me. All that stuff happens there. And it's such a great climax to the movie. And then obviously also, in addition to the not popping Alonzo, having Hoyt have that moment. It's like that moment in a match where the heel's been cheating. The face is like, screw this. And they grab the championship belt, hit the heel, and then they go, I can't do that. You know what I mean? Like, it's like such an ultimate babyface moment of, I'm not going to stoop to your level. You know, I'm going to let the Russians, the other bad guys, kind of take care of you because I know that's right. What happens when I take this evidence in, kind of thing.
Yeah. And to your point, I think this is actually like a really well shot movie. You mentioned that it does feel very modern, even though it is 22 years old. If you watch it today, you wouldn't think that. There's a lot of movies from like the late 90s and early 2000s. When you watch them now, they look very old and very dated. Whereas this one, the way it's shot, the way Antoine Fuqua shoots it, it does still come off as like a very modern movie, which I think is a real testament to it.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. It's well shot. It's well lit. And it still has stuff that's relevant, I think, in the current time.
Yeah. I'm just going to run through some of the other quotes that I had written down here just because I don't want to miss any of them. So we'd mentioned, I don't know why I wrote them in like an order of like my favorite to least favorite instead of chronologically, which I'm realizing now was a real stupid idea. But we got King Kong ain't got shit on me. We got to protect the sheep, you got to catch the wolf, and it takes a wolf to know or to catch a wolf. Great. And then we did the, do you know any stories? Okay, I'll tell you a story. This is a newspaper. It's 90% bullshit. We did that. You obviously mentioned, didn't know you like to get wet, dog. It's such a great line. Oh my God. This shit's chess. It ain't checkers. It's no, and then Ethan Hawke has, it's no fun when the rabbit has the gun. And then he does, should have been a fireman. And then a couple more from Alonzo. Nothing's free in this world, not even arrest warrants. They build jails because of me. Another Denzel just imitated line was when he just keeps on boom, 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 boom. People love to do that. And then it's not what you prove. And you got to control your smiles and cries because that's all you have and nobody can take that away from you. That's what I had for my favorite quotes from the movie. Any that's note to you guys or that you'd want to add to that list?
No, I mean, it always goes back like to the King Kong one for me because that's just iconic because the way he beats his chest too, you see the, obviously the acting's top notch, but it's so believable. Like he just boom, passionate about it. And but you also see like this where you can tell he's scared about what happened, even though he doesn't know, you could tell. And that's, I think that goes a long ways for that entire scene.
Yeah. It's like it's such a, like the wounded lion roaring, you know what I mean? It's like, it's still dangerous, but it's really overplaying how dangerous it is because it knows how vulnerable it is at that very moment.
Mm-hmm. Now, can I ask you guys a question? I think I just keep missing this when I'm watching the movie. When the Russians track him down and shoot him, did they explain how they found him, or was that just like they were sort of tracking his car? I kind of missed how they found him, like while he was on his way out of the city. Or was that
I just always took that as the Russian mafia being fairly well connected, and if they want to find you, like they would obviously know a lot of the places that he would be in general, would know that he had the little house in the jungle and stuff like that, the jungle area. So like, I'm sure they would have loosely been following him in some way that like, okay, he's over in this area. So when he comes out, we'll and cut him off or whatever. But I don't know. It doesn't seem unrealistic to me that like especially in LA with like how things roll. Like rest in peace to PNB Rock, but I don't know if you heard about that situation maybe 2 years ago at this point, but like he was at Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles and people, his location was like on IG. And then within like 5 minutes, there were gangsters there robbing him and he got shot and killed. And so it's like, if, especially if you're in tune with like how a lot of like gang culture and like mafias and stuff like that work, it's pretty easy to, if you're not very careful about your location and whatever, if you have issues with those certain people, people are going to find you unless you're like really, really like on your, you know, minding your P's and Q's on that kind of stuff. So it's me out of it, but it is definitely like, yeah, it is just kind of out of nowhere. And I think kind of I think they almost intentionally did that because they want you to think is getting away or maybe he's never going to get his comeuppance. And so it's like, they don't want to show early on someone tracking him or anything like that. But I do think they do a good enough job, like between Alonzo being so nervous early on or, how the three wise men are treating him and stuff like that. They do a good enough job of building up how much danger he's in that you don't just go, whoa, where did this come from? Even though it is extremely sudden, you're 100% right there.
Yeah. As far as like that goes, as far as like the Russian, they don't really show, and Royce nailed it. I think that was part of it. They just, he owed money and they just kind of knew what to do. You know, I don't think they had a, like they followed, I don't think they wanted to add to the story. It wouldn't surprise me that there's like deleted scenes, because I don't remember the DVD. I mean, I have the DVD, but I don't remember if there's deleted scenes and stuff. But it wouldn't surprise me if there's deleted scenes of that, because you make a good point. Like, how did they find them? But I'd be curious to know that now. But then it didn't really come into play for me.
Yeah. So I guess before we wrap up, I guess just maybe a question for you. Years later, what do you feel like kind of the legacy is Training Day? And is it still relevant today? Is it more relevant even now than it was back then? I don't know. What do you think? What do you think the legacy of the film is, at least for you anyway?
I think it's absolutely relevant today. Because not just in LA, there is police corruption that will happen, you know, and you'll hear about it all over. And there is just general corruption of power, which is, you know, a central theme that I think is relevant to anyone. I think, you know, if you're interested in like movies and how, like what makes a good guy and a bad guy, I think it's really relevant for that. I think as far as legacy goes, I think it's still, it holds up so well. Like, there's some movies that you're like, whoa, this is, I really like this as a kid, but this kind of sucks now. And I think it holds up. If not, like, I appreciate it more as an adult where I can really understand everything that's going on. I think Denzel's performance is one of the greatest performances of like anyone in any movie, really. It's like such an iconic, referenced, pop culturally referenced type of movie. I think Ethan Hawke's performance, as you said, kind of vaulted him into like that top tier actor kind of level. And I mean, gosh, so many good little cameos.
Yeah.
So many actors that like then went on to do some other stuff and were, you know, more well known. I think as far as longevity and legacy, I think it is really up there.
I agree.
I would agree too. And my mom's law enforcement professor, and she's shown this movie in her classes before, because she thinks it could play a role for like some people just to see like on the out is. I mean, she knows, she obviously tells them it's a movie, but she goes, there's a lot of things that you can learn, like how people talk to others and stuff like that. So I know that it's just hearing that, like it's pretty interesting. But she shows a lot of different movies like for like that reason, just to show, like, I mean, it's also like an entertainment thing to say, hey, you know, we teach you all this stuff, but you also get rewarded to be able to watch a movie here and there. So there's always a lesson to it. So but
Yeah, before we let you go, I always like to ask this question. Is there anything that you watched lately that you liked? Anything newer, or even if it's something that's older that you liked, or anything you want to recommend for people to watch?
I just, I watched Killers of the Flower Moon, which was like 3.5 hours, but I was on a flight back from the UK, so I was like, I got 10 hours to kill. If I'm ever going to watch this, this is the time to do it. And even though it was over 3 hours, it actually didn't really feel like it. I thought it was really good, but it's also, it's really hard for me to not enjoy Scorsese and DiCaprio. I think are always like a good pairing. Definitely not a new movie, but The Departed is on my, like, one of my top movies of all time too. That's always one of my like go-to movies. I'm trying to think of what else I've like watched recently that I really, really liked. Gosh, I feel like there's gosh, what was that? Ryan Robs a Bank. Bradley Cooper's in it as well. Oh, The Place Beyond the Ferns or something? The Pines. Place Beyond the Pines. I just watched that as well on a flight. And it's an older movie, but I just saw that, and that, I thought that was phenomenal.
It's a really
good movie. I feel like I've already given a really good, like, you know what kind of movies I really like if you just heard list of movies.
Yeah. Rob, anything else that you've checked out recently?
No, like the last movie I did watch was Training Day. So, but I am planning on going to see Dune 2 this weekend. So there's that.
Nice. Yeah, for myself, Disney Plus, I've just checked out Poor Things. Emma just won the Oscar for that movie. So that was really enjoyable. And today I'm going to start the new Shun series. So crossed, I'm hoping that is actually good. I can't recommend it yet, but from everything I've heard, I should be in for a treat.
Yeah, let me know if that's good, because I'm always into content like that. So holler at me.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is another question that I'm going to ask. Do you have any interest in ever like doing like movie work, like whether it's stunts or anything down the line?
Yeah, I would definitely be interested. I've done a few little like things. Like I did some stuff for the last couple seasons of I Think You Should Leave, but they ended up getting cut. I was on Shark Tank as an extra once. Trying to think of what else. Oh, I was in Ryan Nemeth's short film. I have a little cameo in there. I feel like there's probably something else I'm forgetting. Yeah, being in LA, I would love to. I actually kind of want to get into more voiceover work as well. I've done a little bit of that for some like the 2K games and stuff like that. So I feel like that'd be a fun route to go down. But I also, when I moved to LA, probably a little bit hard-headed of me, but I didn't want to just be a wrestler that was in LA, then ends up a bunch of stuff in movies and kind of forgoes wrestling because it's more profitable to be in movies. But I'm to the point where I feel like I'm doing really well with my career. Obviously, I'd like to even get to higher peaks and whatnot, but I think I could probably take a few hours and here and there and try to audition for some stuff and, you know, maybe make some extra scratch and do some cool stuff. Cause I love movies. It would be cool to be part of them. It's something that I've like super actively pursued as like, oh, hey, like this is going on. I can get you a role in this, or I, you know, this is whatever. So, you know, maybe in the future.
Cool. Nice. Well, do you have anything coming up that you would want people to know about? Promotions that you're going to be at or anything like that?
My next big one for New Japan is going to be the Windy City Riot on April 12th, I believe. And then 2 days after that is Deadlock in Raleigh, North Carolina. If you want to see my full schedule, you know, check out my socials at Royce Isaacs, Twitter and Instagram. And I keep everyone up to date with all my stuff that's coming up. And if you're not already checking out New Japan Strong, check out New Japan Strong. I also have a YouTube channel where I upload full matches and highlights and stuff like that every once in a while. And if you enjoyed the me bullshitting about Training Day and you want to check out more of my stuff or whatever, I would love for you to. So thank you to anyone that sat down and listened to us talk a movie for an hour, because it was really fun for me.
Awesome. We appreciate it. Gisberto?
No, wait. I had so much fun too. As for me, you guys can just find me here. Thank you to everyone who takes the time to listen to us. We really do appreciate it. It does mean a lot. So thank you.
Guys, you can follow me at Rob Wilkins on Twitter. I am also on Instagram at Fightful Rob and on Threads at Fightful Rob. Want to say thank you for joining us on Fightful Film Club. We will talk to you soon. Take care.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.